It's a busy world, isn't it? How many hats are you wearing today? I think I've got about 4 or 5. Farmers and ranchers, of course, are known for the many jobs they perform daily. Today, I'll be speaking with Wayne Knight, Executive Director at Holistic Management International, and you know he's worn many hats to hold this position. And as with all of our guests, Wayne's expertise runs in many directions. Our focus today will be the broad topic of management. I'm Robin with Cultivated Audio for August 2024. Grab your earbuds and/or a shovel and let's dig in. Must have been a surprise looking back. You probably never thought you'd end up in Texas being from South Africa.
Yeah, things change in your life. You get influenced by all sorts of things. I talk specifically about holistic management because it's a process that I came to early on. Savory and Parsons were significant parts of my background. They did consulting work as a duo. Savory, who started Holistic Management International, and Stan Parsons, who started Ranching for Profit, working together as consultants in the late 70s with my parents on the farm that had been in the family, but my dad landed up buying from his family, and very much involved in what America would call farming, so tilling the soil, planting, irrigation, and then moving away from that in later times to pasture-based livestock, pretty much. And that whole transition, what that looked like with the processes that Parsons and particularly Savory were at that stage experimenting with, trialing with their clients. And I think it's a huge part of why Ranching for Profit and Holistic Management have done so well is that they recognized that it's a complex place and consulting is not necessarily the best way to go about things because there's so many assumptions made in a consulting role in this complex environment. And that embracing the complexity was a huge part of both parties, my parents and Parsons and Savory when they later split up, how they've created these two organizations out of those early days, the experimentation, the trials and errors. And, unique people in their ability to synthesize information. Real original thinker, Alan's particularly an original thinker, and process how to make something complex and put it into a management framework that can be applied in so many situations. That's what I came to love about it.
Yes, on the one hand, that's it in a nutshell, right? That brings up two things for me. One, it must continue developing. I read somewhere that you, when you started embracing this system so many and that many years ago, you really dove in and started enhancing and increasing the scope of holistic management. And here you are today, the executive director, is that correct? Executive director of Holistic Management International?
Yes.
Yes.
It's a humbling place. I would like to tell the story that I don't regard myself as an exceptional manager of land. I went through phases of thinking I'd figured it out and that I knew what to expect and what was around the corner, because that's the nature of humans. I think we have that arrogant tendency. And every time I thought I'd figured it out and that things were going well, inevitably something came around the corner that was unexpected. And you get this sort of massive dose of humility because you haven't figured it out. That's an important thing.
Yes.
An important part of the journey.
Yes.
You don't ever figure it out.
Yeah, I think it's equally important that here you were and you thought you had figured it out. So it really enabled you to blaze new trails, right?
Yeah. And keep trying and keep figuring it out. You know, I was saying I don't regard myself as a particularly good manager. It's embracing this complexity good enough? What is enough? I will say that I worked myself to a standstill at times. I got sick from working too much, so that doesn't speak to holistic so well.
Yes.
Which is part of the aspirations, is to get this balance. I did work outside of the balance, and yet it's the balance that enabled us to decide to stop ranching. It was that goal and the realization when we read our goal and looked at our situation, well, we're not living this goal that we've written down that encompasses a place that we love to live, a work that's fulfilling, an environment that's beautiful. We had aspects of that, but in the big picture, there were things out of our control and increasingly out of our control that made us look at this and go, we don't love this anymore. There are aspects of it that we love, and it's become far enough from what we set out to live that we prepare to make a big change. And having been on HMI's board for a number of years and approached by members of the board to apply for the ED position at a time when our ranching life was really not what we wanted it to be, from a threat of theft, lots of animals being stolen, a lot of concern about security of tenure, a lot of things just really moving in a direction that were out of our control, therefore able to make a pivot and try something completely new.
Well, it's wonderful that that opportunity came along. And one of my questions today was going to be about coming into holistic management and that system. There are pieces, just like you mentioned, that end up being overlooked more than others in working the holistic management system. And in this case, it was you and your family.
Yes. And in the fortunate position, I believe that I do quite a lot of training. I do quite a lot of presentation, facilitation of workshops and things. And big early significant mentor was Dick Richardson, now in Australia, but South African as well. He was the educator that got me hooked on holistic management. He was also the educator that got me through the educator program, because I wanted to be the best manager I could be and signed up for the educator program so that I would force myself be encouraged to really use the whole spectrum of holistic management. And I think that's kind of that burnout I was talking about, trying to do everything perfectly, really well, and not succeeding, and the frustration of, well, I can't do the grazing planning as well as I want to and move the animals as often as I should and keep the balance on the home front and the balance between life and family and income, developing the business side, being pretty ambitious, having lots of enterprises and different businesses actually at the same time, and battling with that interrelationship, getting that balance right, and realizing that it's okay to let some things not be absolutely perfect. You can let go of things so that there's a better overall picture. That was part of that failing that I was talking about.
Yes.
You know, it's okay not to be on top of everything all the time. It will drive you insane trying to do all of this stuff all of the time. What's good enough? Where do you need to focus right now? And I think that's an important part of getting it right in the big picture rather than getting it right in the minutia. And that's an important balance. I don't think it's talked about enough, as you were saying.
And I think key in that is also that it was one thing maybe leading at one point for you, and for someone else, it's going to be somewhere else that they're going to lag behind or feel the pressure. Being in this position as a mentor that you've been, you must see these younger people really developing as men, as women, as humans. So they're really developing into holistic beings themselves.
Well, it's the balance, right?
Yes.
What's the big picture? It's what do you need to focus on now? Where you're going to get the biggest bang for your buck for the next action? What we're talking about here now is, well, what is that balanced goal? We generally talk about goals as winning, goal of being the number one team or the number one business. in that focus, we forget a lot of that ranching isn't a game,
right,
like a sports team. It's a lot of things. It's a business, yes, so profitability. It's a live, integrated, ecological process, yes. It's a home. It's a place for relaxation and belonging. It's all of these things all together. There's an aspiration to have it all as part of the goal, but at any particular time, there's going to be an aspect that's going to need more attention than another. And in that balancing process, that's you're never going to be perfect, and that's okay. What do you need to focus on right now that's the most important, and have this sort of hierarchy of, and that's ever-changing. Even the goal changes. And that seems frustrating to some people, but it's the nature of life. And keeping that top of mind, I think, is a huge part of the power. We change. What we want in our 20s is not what we want in our 30s, is not what we want in our 40s. Everything is dynamic. And being abreast of that change in ourselves, in our relationships, in the needs, the finances, the ecology, all play a part. And that's why consulting is not the answer, but a management framework. And there are many management frameworks, but holistic management, I think, is so valuable in the farming place and outside, but particularly in the farming ranching space, because it is such an interrelated place. The home, the business, the landscape all merge so integrally. It is that balance, and it is the decision making to keep that balance.
Yes, and I've seen you quoted stating that at first you thought you were a rancher, and then you thought you were a grass farmer, and then you're a soil microbe farmer, and then, oh, wait, I need to buy a better hat closet, because it won't just do with having three hats. So with the holistic management courses, of course, I've been hearing they're very successful, and the teaching of assessing land and soil is one thing. You can observe, okay, if you have this or this or this, you need to move in this direction. But observation is such a key piece. Is there a way to teach that?
So, you know, I think the question you asked is quite a complex one. I think the first part is observation is critical. A lot of the discussions that I'm in, there is a place for tech to help us to monitor, but we are from hunter-gatherer stock, all of us. Every person on the planet came from a hunter-gatherer background. Hunter-gatherers, in my experience, are extremely observant, extremely resourceful and adaptable. We have that ability to discern, to see, to observe trend. Our problem is remembering whether the trend is positive or negative. And I think that's where things fall down. We're very good at observing right now. We can train ourselves to observe, but we haven't been, as a species, particularly good at tracking whether the trend is up or down over the longer period of time.
Yes.
That's the piece that is not innately in us. And that's the piece that really has to be brought to the fore is, what was this like 2 years ago before the drought or before the flood or before? We forget that really quickly. And tying the trend in with the management, because whatever we do is a management decision, whether it's leaving a piece of land and not doing anything, removing animals, or really intently looking at animals, there's a management choice. And that management choice, in the absence of big herds and predators and whatever, we have this influence. And recognizing the shifts and the trends is in us, but we don't do it for a long-term trend. So in that piece, really important. On the higher philosophical level, what is holistic management? Yes, it is being in tune with what's the quality of my life and is it on the right trend? What's the quality of the finance? Well, much easier to track if we're doing the financial planning, the budgeting, and the tracking of that budgeting, which we have great technology and great resources to help us. On the ecological side, it's this observation. So it's both a state of mind, Are we open to think about things and belonging in the natural world? And I call that the holistic philosophical piece. And then there's this wonderful management or set of management tools, because it is about being holistic in the management and in the decisions. That means we have a goal, and we like to call it a holistic goal. That's a balanced goal that creates the tension between improving, caring for environment, making sure the finances are right, and having quality of life as a piece there. That's creating the direction. And now observing each of those aspects and having been really conscious of what the trajectory is. Are we improving in those well-rounded human piece, the environment piece, the economic piece? And that's a very different value system from a lot of what we taught and a lot of what, let's call it conventional, for want of a better word. It's a different way to think about things from the way we typically taught. And that's the beauty for me. There is a balance. We did a workshop with some friends, holistic management people down in Central Texas, and they talked about this wonderful freedom from the conventional way of doing things, being apart from this rat race of we've got to have a bigger car, I've got to have a bigger house, to I want to be in tune with land. I've reevaluated what enough is. And that's not to say that people who are successful are bad or anything, or successful financially, but what is success to you? Is that a connection with land? Are you in love with the land because you know it and understand it? That's a different value system from a lot of the way we tend to think about things.
Yes, yes. And I love how it really fits with so many charts that I've seen that show improving the land is the guarantee to yielding profits into the future. And I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit about where the low cost, low risk feeds into this and sort of what's the basis of that and how it works.
Fantastic. I think a big part about where, for want of a better description, conventional ag, modern agriculture has gone wrong is this obsession with volume, with amount of a commodity that's produced. I liken that to the expression that's used, we need to feed the world. You know, my responsibility as a farmer, as a rancher, is to feed the world. And that's been the emphasis, volume, volume. Push volume. That is a comment that's used a lot in the world, in the circles that I operate in.
Mm.
And there's not an emphasis on quality. You've got to get the tons. You've got to get the metrics. With that mindset goes, well, what's the efficiency? We've got to produce the most tons per acre at the lowest cost. Books like The Dorito Effect, current books about nutrition and quality of produce are saying how negative that has been on a multitude of levels, on human health, on nutrient density, on soil health, on soil erosion, ineffective water cycle. We know about all these things, but it's the background philosophy of more is better, cheap, quick, easy is the best way. How do you overpower nature?
Right.
And that's very often very high input ag. So to get the high production, you need to systemize. You need to have precision. You need to have efficiency of water application. And you turn that whole philosophy around to, well, what is enough? What does quality mean? And where does that fit into the economic system? What happens when you look at production in harmony? It's a completely different mindset. It's a way that many people have not thought about agriculture, but have to think about it because of the trajectory of current high production, high yield models.
Yes.
That reliability, we're turning that on its head and going, well, if we can be low-cost producers and use technology more as a support to production in harmony with nature rather than a domination of nature, we have less fertilizer input, we'll have less chemical input, because when we get a weed, we're not even calling it a weed, we're saying, well, here's a plant that's showing up because of our prior management. It's a very different way of looking at what we observe, what we're capable of observing, and how we react to that in line with what is our preferred future look like. It's just turning high production model on its head and saying, how do we work in harmony? And the beauty here, as executive director of HMI, I get to see people who are doing a wonderful job.
Yes.
And they all speak the similar language. When I observe and work with nature, my input costs come down. Trying to cut the input costs completely, and then you land up like an addict who goes through withdrawal symptoms and there's a crash. Some people do that quickly and get through it. Some people take it very gradually and have this very, you know, sort of incremental weaning off whatever fertilizer chemical process. And I can talk a lot about that, but this is the heart of what we're trying to do. How do we work with nature? How do we intentionally create that vision of the preferred future where we are more in harmony? And out of that comes this low-cost model. It's reliable. When it rains less, you get less growth, but the land's more resilient. You're getting more pounds of quality forage per inch of rainfall. How do we make that transition and work in the image and within our budget and within our capabilities? That's the beauty of this management model to me, is identifying where the attention needs to be with this. Are we working in the right direction? Are these decisions actually heading us in this preferred future direction? And if not, tweak the management. At this stage, it's finances that are hurting us. Well, then we're going to focus more time, more attention, more resource on the financial part. But the aim here is to reduce our chemical, is to reduce that reliance on the technology that is going to have the unintended consequence of killing off bees or making it harder for birds to survive or whatever. It's creating that harmonious experience and at the same time building in the resilience, the diversity, the hardiness of the animals, because it plays into all these different levels of what is it, an animal that's more in tune with its environment, more better adapted, able to convert the forage that's there more efficiently, more effectively. It becomes a lower cost animal. We're not pushing production per head, per cow, per sheep, per ewe. We're now looking at, well, what is the efficiency here in terms of the big picture? Pounds per acre, pounds per inch of rainfall, whatever that metric is. The beauty of working with nature is that, yes, there's less production, but it's a higher quality of production. The food that comes out of it is a superior food and therefore has a higher value. And the outcome is more birds on the land, more pounds of grass per acre, more resilience. It's all of these things all together.
Yes, and we can really go all day down the road, can't we, of how it relates, and one thing will improve the other and then just take us off into all these directions. So the road all of a sudden is the web, of course. And I'm wondering, does a practice of high density, long recovery grazing, does it vary much on ranches around the world?
Absolutely. You know, I think there's a lot of attention in certain circles given to ultra-high density grazing and the benefits of that. The caveat to me is not that ultra-high density grazing doesn't work. It's a trajectory to get there. People who are really successful at it have generally got, what do you call it? They're either really good stockmen and observers of environment. And that's not something you come to overnight and decide, well, next week I'm going to go from what I'm doing today and become an ultra-high-density grazer and not expect to pay some significant school fees. How do we help people get to the right level of density, get to the right level that suits their lifestyle, their experience, and their expectations? There's no question that really high density with the right genetic and really good management is miraculous. But it doesn't have to be the be-all and the end-all. It's a route to take, and it shouldn't be something that you start out with. It's rather something that you could aim to get. The way I like to explain it, too, is what we should be after is improvement, not an ultimate. I can almost hear people saying, well, he's talking nonsense. How do you grade that? And it's not a grade that you're going to get for being the best grazing manager in the world. If that's the outcome, then probably ultra-high density with a very well-adapted animal may be something to celebrate and look up to. But the goal to me should be, what's the right level of density for your situation, for your ranch at this time in your life? That's what we're after. It's the balance, right? Nature is incredibly forgiving when you start just working better or improving what you're doing. So if you've got two paddocks and you go to four paddocks and you give more recovery time, you will see results. If you go from eight paddocks to 20 paddocks, mm-hmm. there are going to be costs that you're going to pay. There's fencing, there's time, there's the negative side of things, and then there's the reward side of things. And the success is going to depend on how well does it suit your life, because what is success? It shouldn't be that £1 million per acre is the ultimate. It should be what's getting you and your land into a better place over time. Investment-wise, learning-wise, that's a far better question or a far better measure of success to me than, oh, he's only at £50,000 per acre with his management. That's not good enough. It doesn't measure anything in terms of the big picture, and that's the goal, right?
It's yes.
Holistic.
Yes. So what is universal then about assessing a field in preparation for high-density grazing?
I would say there's very little that's going to help you assess other than what is it like in this point in time mm-hmm. and what is its trend to the next time you evaluate, and has there been success or failure? What does that look like? Is there better water infiltration? Is there more soil life? Soil life becomes a difficult measure because very often it's a lab test, and the lab tests are showing you the results of multiple decisions and management choices that have been made prior to the soil test. So that's where, for me, the observation is far more important and nuanced than, oh, you've got a 2%, we're aiming for a 2% increase in carbon. That increase in a percent or two of carbon in the soil had so many other decisions and that speed. So to me, you can't generalize on these things, because what's the background situation?
Right.
If there are more species of grass and more species of forb and more cover on the soil surface, those are the immediate measures. But if your animal performance isn't where it should be, and that's not a snapshot in time,
right?
It's in the production cycle, do your animals need to be in this level of condition in order for them to reconceive or to be slaughterable or whatever that measure is? It's these moving targets that we hate because they make it complex.
It's all a moving target.
Yeah, but that's the measure, right? And that's the learning journey, and mm-hmm. that's the balancing act. It's a dry year, how are you going to react? It's a wet year, how is that changing your plan to your actual moves on your grazing plan, if that's what you're using? These decisions, it's not fixed. You cannot replicate a grazing plan year on year, even if it sounds good in theory.
Yes, of course.
Autopilot, we have to be adaptive. Whatever we're doing, and that takes that observation, and again, that challenge of, well, has this improved from last year or not? How do I know that it's improved? How do I confirm that most of my decisions were right most of the time? Therein lies holistic management or not.
Yes, and the testing of soil it's a picture of what's going on, but I think relying heavily on that, I mean, it's a snapshot, literally, of a season at best, right?
I don't want to say it that harshly, because you're measuring the right things in a soil test. What I am reluctant to do is base management decisions on what's happening in the soil, because it is a lag indicator. Let's face it, definitely a lag indicator. If you're talking the impacts of animals and time for plants to recover and regrow in that milieu, soil tests in the sense of, oh, there's this mineral in terrible excess or deficiency, that's a very different kind of test, and that's a very different kind of outcome that you're going to get. So if we're talking the application of grazing and time and density as the main tools, which I regard as the most effective from a reliability of, you know, you're putting in infrastructure, you're putting in time for management, you get a pretty reliable return on that investment. If you're talking soil amendments, either microbes or micronutrients, it becomes a lot less clear unless you have a real problem with, you're short of microbes, probably less of an important additive than the micronutrients that may be in excess or deficient and what amendments, because that is a conversation. That is a level of expertise that I certainly haven't got. I'm focusing on where do we get the biggest bang for our buck, and right, on most reasonable soils, the best investment, as far as my experience and observation and speaking to people, that's where you get the biggest bang for your buck, is in that long-term, yes, very reliable return. And that's, again, speaking to this low-cost, low-risk investment. You can put in a cover crop or add seeds, but the hit and miss of that is you get a big response or you get nothing. Whereas with fencing, time and management, putting animals with the best of your ability at the right amount of time, the best of your observation ability in production cycles, getting animals to the right level of production in the production cycle, that's where you get really high and reliable returns. And that's what I want to help people focus on.
Right. There's such beauty and resilience in that fine tuning. And you've experienced working with very experienced ranchers and farmers, as well as people just starting out. And if you look across the board, is there a question that is asked most?
No. If I've understood your question, no. I think people are in very different places on the journey. There are just so many places that people who are passionate and are eager to learn or eager to fine-tune. It's across the board on very, very varying aspects. You know, experienced ranchers, I would say, quite often have very strong paradigms that they've inherited or learnt along their journey, and those are tough to change. And then you have inexperience, which means, you know, you don't have paradigms, which is great because you don't have to change the way you think, but you've got so much to learn about things that you just know very little about. It's where are you in the learning journey, whether it's financial or ecological or animal husbandry or whatever.
How would you approach, you know, here's 500 acres of industrialized farmland. What would be your first move? What would you do first?
It's very difficult,
yes,
because what do you have? What do you know? What's your budget? What's the end goal look like? What has to be in place? What would be nice to have? It's really, really difficult. Just simply on a rainfall spectrum, is this a high rainfall or a low rainfall environment? In a low rainfall environment, animals become incredibly important at revitalizing, at kickstarting. In a much more humid, moist environment, you just let that land be, and bugs are on the soil surface. They are, any bit of organic material will be broken down and become part of the mineral cycle. You're going to be able to get things happening in a more moist environment without trying very hard. Whereas in an arid environment, you know, on the opposite end where you've got a very limited rainfall window in the year, the animals are essential to kickstarting that ecosystem. So just the rainfall by itself is going to have a huge influence on what sort of growth and what sort of response you're going to get. And then, you know, all of those things that I've mentioned, you know, who's the person? Is this a business that needs to revitalize it because they have a corporate social responsibility, or is this someone who's inherited a piece of land and they need to get it going, or all of these things? I would say, well, it depends, you know, and that's the unique part about the management process, is we're not trying to make assumptions for people. We're trying to understand the situation, understand the constraints, not tell people what they need to do, help them figure it out, understand how to respond to environment, what environment needs, give them some planning tools so that they can make decisions. It becomes impossible to actually be the consultant, I believe, in the sense that you should do this. The consultant, if there is one in a holistic management environment with a, you know, one of our educators, is let's understand how the ecosystem functions in your environment, where your land is, where this piece of land that you're talking about, what are the prevailing conditions? What is the situation on the ground? How poor is it?
Right, yes.
And what are your income requirements? It's impossible to be able to say, well, you should start here and here's a recipe. And for a lot of people, that answer is extremely, extremely frustrating. But it's a real answer because it is complex. And we need to work it out and figure it out.
Yes. I feel like I've been schooled so much just in this chat with you right now. And it also brings out the brilliance of the holistic management system, I think, because it not only acknowledges all of that, which you were just describing in the last bit of the discussion, but also there are so many savory certified farms and ranches in a lot of different environments. So the learning has really developed.
Yes, it's learning. It's a philosophy and a practice. So I think that's difficult to articulate. It's a way of looking at the world, and it's a way of working with nature. It's a place of understanding your place in nature. I love there's a triangular depiction, man on top with everything underneath, from apex predators, and it goes down as we are taught to think, as we are structured to think in this sort of pyramid with man sitting on top. And to change that picture of a circle and man is somewhere in the picture and related to it, and our role is the management piece, which is now absent because we've upset the apple cart. We've removed those big herds, which evolved in Texas, Colorado over millennia with pack hunting predators, to create these grasslands with forested areas. But the driving force here was rainfall, big herds, and the predators that hunted them. And that's what we've disrupted. And our role now is to be recreating that as closely as we possibly can through nuance, need, budget, the best that we can. And that's a very different mindset from how I was schooled at college and what my role as a manager was. You're a manager, you're a problem solver. That means you need to decide what chemical to apply at what time and when to drench the animals. And you're going, no, hold on. If you're drenching the animals, you're going to wipe out dung beetles. If you're going to do this, you're going to have that effect. What's the negative impact there? Okay. How are we going to recreate an animal that our great-grandparents farmed with, that did, or ranched with, that didn't need those drench? How did they do it? They were moving. They were more nomadic, or whatever they were doing. How do we look at this and be better than we were yesterday in this balanced way. And that means you're going to fall off. They are aspects that you're not going to get right because it's complex, right?
Yes,
but it's that observation and that intent to look at yourself as part of the process, not I'm imposing my will. It's a very big mind shift, and it's not something that happens overnight.
That laugh had so much knowing in it.
Well, yeah, I've made these mistakes, and I love that I can talk about the mistakes that I've made and the challenges I've had with those paradigms, because it's so real. You know, we are a product of our upbringing and our education system, and it's a challenge to recognize it and then act on it. And those are different things, too. It's one thing to acknowledge that's where we come from. It's something else to, I don't know, create a new flow, to create a new direction.
Yes, and I think I heard this first from Kenny Ausubel many years ago, but he referred to this all not as a kingdom, but as a kingdom. And in recognizing that, I think the reverberations of that can certainly be very powerful. Wayne, I know you teach and observe and visit many, many ranches and farms. If someone came up to you and said, okay, will you come to our conference and speak? And I'm just talking about right now, what would your topic, what would you want it to be?
Didn't see that one coming. You know, to be honest, I think it really depends on the people in the audience. I think for researchers, there's a message. I think holistic management has come across as anti-science, and I often find myself speaking from a, well, scientists just don't understand perspective. So if I was speaking to scientists, I'd want to really talk about the relevance of management. We're talking metrics and outcomes as being really important. To me, the philosophy behind research is creating the predictability of outcome. That's what science does. Where management wants to create an outcome by altering the management. And if scientists can help managers be better managers and spend less time trying to predict a statistical outcome, that's a really important thing that I'd like scientists to understand.
Yes.
If that came out right, but I think for me that's fundamental to how we approach management in a scientific world. Test plots, replicating management styles is a waste of time to me, my perspective. Whereas if we're helping people judge their management to have this preferred outcome and acknowledge that managers have very different outcomes, depending on who you're speaking to. If I was speaking to ranchers, it's very difficult to generalize. Beginning ranchers, it would be this idea of let's work with nature. How do you become in tune with nature? Similar to established ranchers who don't see the world in that light, but it's a different working with nature. Most ranchers would say, well, of course I work with nature. But it's understanding the negative outcomes of a lot of the technologies that have become common and, what do you call it, every day. What is the negative effect of using a drench? It's needed for internal parasites, external parasites, this, that, the next. But if we start changing how we manage, our reliance on those chemicals reduces, and the positive impacts of using less of those chemicals has a multiplier effect on improving life for all life, you know, that kingdom you were talking about. How do we incrementally get to the kingdom of there's a place for dung beetles, there's a place for predatory dung beetles, there's a place for big dung beetles, small dung beetles, everything in between, and the birds that feed on them. How do we think about that when we're talking chemical use or control? There's a knock-on effect, there's a benefit to this low-cost, low-risk ranching that isn't fully explained in chemicals are good or chemicals are bad. You know, holistic management says chemicals are bad, they're not that bad. We don't really know how bad they are because we're not looking at the knock-on effect. I'd love to speak a lot to ranchers about the unintended consequences of decisions that have been made out of habit. I could go on and on. But
yes, no, that's yeah. great. Thank you so much. Well, just one more question for you, Wayne. What's your favorite cut of meat?
Sure. That's impossible.
Okay.
What animal are we talking?
Okay, let's talk beef.
Probably shin. There's very little better than the shin stew. But then... Yeah.
You're a very well-rounded man, Wayne. That's great. And honestly, your understanding of and presentation about holistic management is just so brilliant and far-reaching. So I thank you so much for sharing today. Is there anything you feel you need to share or would like to before we close off for the day?
Thanks for the opportunity. It feels like we've had a nice conversation. And thanks for your time.
Many thanks to Wayne Knight for sharing his life's focus with us and the many he interacts with and educates throughout the year. We can be reached at cultivatedaudio.com for any guest information and to connect with the beautiful Regen Ag community. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for being here and for helping make here where we all want to be.